Okay, welcome again, folks, to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman. We're having fun Blog Talk Radio issues again, where it's about 10 seconds behind what's going on, but that makes things more interesting. Again, this is another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. I am your host, Ken Molman, and we're back for the full hour this week. I apologize. Last week, folks, I was just beat. I couldn't do it. All right, music, stop that. There we go. I apologize, folks. I don't know what's going on, but for whatever reason, that just happens sometimes. So, again, I was last week after being out all weekend and gathering with fellow folks to do some business on the Libertarian Party side, I was just wiped out. And so I could not do a full show. I apologize. I saw that there were a number of callers that called in and wanted to actually speak last week, and I apologize. I wasn't really there. So if you guys want to call in this week about any of the topics we're about to talk to, I'll give you the number out right now. The number is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. On the docket for tonight, we have daylight saving time, the sequester, the filibuster, and a hemp update. So we've got quite a bit to talk about tonight. And again, if you'd like to call in about any of these topics or if anything else is going on that I'm not aware of, I've been kind of out of the loop this week, please don't hesitate to do so. So I guess we'll start out with my least favorite topic, which is daylight savings time. I absolutely hate DST. There's nothing that I find redeeming about it. I personally hate the shift in time. I'm somebody who has always struggled with consistent sleep anyway, and when you mess with the clocks, it makes it worse. And so this week I'll be dragging my rear end around horribly because, you know, I have to wake up an hour earlier than I've been waking up for the last 4 or 5 months. I guess the point is that what we need to talk about here is why do we even still do daylight saving time? Because at this point, I think it's 3.5, 4 months, maybe it's 4.5 months that we actually do of quote-unquote standard time. We actually do more time in the quote-unquote saving time than we do in standard time. So, and I've made this joke before, and I've seen some others make it recently too. You know, if saving time is the bulk, it should be, you know, called standard time. I mean, it's what we are most of the time. And let's rename what we currently call standard time to daylight wasting time. Because obviously if we're not saving it, we're wasting it. But seriously, the point of daylight savings time is that it's supposed to save energy. It's supposed to be a means of reducing consumption, which right away when you start talking about master plans at government levels to try to push people's behavior around, I'm already, you know, starting to jump ship. But on top of that, and this is the funny thing, there is now proof that daylight savings time does not save energy. And it was actually done when Indiana switched over to using DST in 2006. Now, Indiana is a unique situation. They're right on the border of two time zones. They are in Eastern time, but the northwest area of the state is really suburbs of Chicago, which is the farthest east point, easternmost point of central time. So with them being on the western border of the timeline, what they did was they allowed counties to adjust as they wanted to. So the northwest end of the state went with central time, and they did daylight savings. The southeast corner, which is suburbs of Cincinnati, went with eastern time with daylight savings time. But the rest of the state was just Eastern time. It was Eastern Standard Time all the time. And again, that wasn't until, I believe it was 2006, the first time they sprung forward. And what they were able to determine by looking at the electric meters and the overall power consumption of people that had previously, you know, they had all this data about how much power they used over the aggregate across multiple years, blah, 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 for, you know, a very long time. What they were able to determine is that DST, daylight savings time, the thing ostensibly set up to save energy, actually uses more energy. And yet, the solution was not to get rid of daylight savings time, but to extend it, because obviously extending something that's bad will certainly make it better. And how typical of a government program or government design to, if it's not working, we just need to double it, you know, double down, that'll make it better. The, if I remember the statistics right, and the stories I've been looking up here from 2008, which are getting harder and harder to find, the number, if I remember right, is a 3% increase in energy consumption in Indiana with daylight savings time versus just staying standard time. And, you know, people say, well, you know, it's only 3%, who cares? Well, the whole point of this is to save 2 or 3%. That was the idea, that when you have a price curve and supply and demand, as demand keeps going up and supply keeps going down, there's an exponential curve on price. And the idea behind this was to get the last few points off of that exponential curve to keep that price from being so high. That was the whole point. Well, if we're actually increasing the cost, we're actually creating a larger burden on everybody and, in fact, increasing electric prices. Now, of course, electric companies really don't necessarily care. I mean, they get paid by the kilowatt hour, so what do they care? And they make their margin no matter what. I mean, yeah, they have to go through state boards and whatever to set their rates, but, you know, let's be real here. It's not like it's when's the last time you heard of a rate increase being shut down that was really a big deal that caused any issues or anything? I mean, you never hear about those. And in fact, of course, now I assume everybody else has gotten theirs. I've got my notice that my rates are going up courtesy of the coal plant shutdowns about 6 months ago. So my energy costs this year are 13% higher than they were last year. And boy, am I happy about that. But again, you know, compounding all that, of course, is that daylight savings time is actually causing people to consume more energy. And so if you want to talk about how to do things smarter or better, it's just another example of how government comes in with this big program. And I've heard the arguments that, oh, well, over on the East Coast it works. Well, that may be true. I don't know. But, you know, daylight savings time is a federal thing. They exempted a few states when they originally did it, but it is a federal thing. And so if you want to talk about why the one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work, if you want to talk about government plans that are supposed to do one thing and do the exact opposite, if you want to talk about things that have all kinds of other consequences, and the consequences this week, folks, will be an increase in the number of traffic fatalities as a result of daylight saving. That's been shown. If you want to talk about a bad government program that does the opposite of what it wants to do or is supposed to do and then also causes other issues, this is a great example, and it's one that everyone lives. Unlike some of the issues that we've talked about on the show, some of the issues that we face that, you know, individually we are very hyper on, that we really want to push, not everybody experiences those, and not everybody gets it, right? And that's a hard thing for people to get, but to put themselves literally, you know, to really try to put themselves in somebody else's shoes, it's hard for some people to do that. And so when we talk to people about different issues, it's sometimes hard to get the other person to understand what we're talking about. Daylight saving time is a great, great example of a government program that does not work, does the opposite of what it's supposed to do. They double down and it doesn't save anything either, and it actually has other ill effects. This is a great thing that we can use as an example, and I do. And, of course, using it as an example, I inevitably run into the defenders of the program who inevitably do so not based on any sort of energy savings or anything like that, but, well, I like it because it means that when I do this, it's still light outside. Okay. I mean, couldn't you have done that an hour earlier? I don't know. I don't I don't pretend to want to control somebody's life or whatever, but, I mean, it seems to me I'm not one that wants to change, you know, create a bunch of rules because, oh, it would be better if the world did things this way because I want it that way. That's not how I approach things. And so then I have a disconnect with those folks and, oh, I want to keep daylight saving time because it affords me the ability to do such and such and such and such. Okay, you know, let's talk about how that's not really the intent of the program and not at all what it's supposed to be for. And, okay, you're one of the people that benefits. Great. But it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. It does the opposite of what it's supposed to do and has all these negative consequences. And at the end of the day, because those people are generally self-interested jerks, they say, it's fine, I don't care. I like the fact that time goes forward. And that's pretty much how that conversation ends. But for most people, you know, this, especially the spring forward, is a good time to talk about failed government programs in general. Because, you know, the fallback, everybody's like, oh, I get an hour extra sleep. Well, yeah, but you had to pay for that originally. I mean, it's not like you really got an extra hour of sleep. You know, sprung forward at one point. So at this point in time, people are very familiar with the program or, you know, the effects of it as far as the time change and are generally grumpy about it. So this is a good opportunity to help open some folks' eyes. And so I'm always a big fan of taking every opportunity that can to do that. So, sorry, I see somebody in the chat room asking about Ashley Judd. I'll throw that on the agenda here. If we get to it, we'll get to it. You know, honestly, anyway, we'll get to that if we get to it. So, I guess that's basically the point of the daylight saving time thing is it's a failed program with tons of negative consequences and an opportunity for us that believe that government is not the answer, government is generally the problem, that we can show just even in little things, little programs. I mean, how much does daylight savings time actually cost the government to run? Not much compared to all these other grandiose programs that they have. But it fails, and it fails pretty miserably, really. I mean, yeah, the clocks move forward, but all the reasons for doing so are completely invalid and false. So, you know, take that with you, and we'll see what happens. Let's see here. Sorry, I'm reading the chat room again. We'll get to the Ashley Judd thing, I promise. Okay, if we can get there, we'll get there. So the next thing up on the list here is the sequester. And, of course, that was a big whooping deal. It's kind of funny because for the last 2-3 weeks, I've been so busy. I don't have a radio in my car anymore, which is unfortunate because that was one of the ways I kept track of what was going on. I don't have television. We use Netflix at home, and so I don't watch the news. I generally get most of my information off the Internet. I scour news sites. I look at the local news. I look at the Courier Journal, the Herald Leader. I try to look at some of the bigger papers in the state to get a feel of what's going on out there and whatever. But I've been really busy, and so I hadn't actually heard that the sequester was coming until about 2 days, 3 days before it did. And, you know, at the time, everybody was making a big joke out of it. Oh, my gosh, you know, planes will fall from the sky. And, oh, my gosh, it's going to be havoc. The government will shut down. And the amount of money we're talking about. And it was $85 billion is what I have here. And out of a $3.5 trillion budget, it's less than 2.5% of the overall budget. So if the entire government ceases to function because of a 2.5% pay cut, I mean, let's be honest here, folks. Most of us, through inflation, have had a real cut of more than 2.5% in our pay. I mean, we may be bringing home the same amount of money, but with the amount that everything costs now, you know, we're all paying more. We've all taken more than a 2.5% hit. And we're all still here. And so it's funny that government, when government has to take a 2.5%, it's the end of the freaking world, right? I mean, everybody else in the U.S. has taken a hit. Everybody else has, cut back because they've had to, for the most part. I guess not everybody else, but most people have. But when government needs to cut back 2.5%, it's the end of the freaking world. And I just don't see the logic in this. I know that most of it's scare tactics. Now, I know one of the big things that everybody was talking about after, you know, it actually happened and, you know, we were all still here. I thought maybe the Mayan prophecy was just a few months late, you know, based on the way everybody was talking about the sequester. But, you know, we were all still here, and the only thing I really heard about was the White House cutting the tours, you know, the public tours in the White House. And I think that's pretty stupid. I mean, really, that's kind of a dumb thing to cut. I don't really understand what that's supposed to be other than, you know, trying to hurt children who are coming to D.C. As part of their school tour or as a family vacation or whatever. People who come to D.C., you know, you make your rounds, right? You go to Congress, you go to the White House, you go to the Smithsonian. I mean, these are the things you do when you're on a school trip or a family trip out to D.C. So they're penalizing people who are trying to spend money in D.C. I don't really understand why that's a good idea, but whatever. And apparently the cost to operate the White House tours is pretty darn minimal. I saw some numbers. I saw different numbers, whatever. But I did see there was a group that was offering to pay for the public tours for the White House, that, you know, if the government wouldn't pay for it, that they would. And I never heard anything else after that. I don't know whatever came of it. But I guess the point is that if we can't cut 2.5% out of the budget, we're screwed. I mean, we have a $3.5 trillion annual budget, of which over $1.5 trillion is deficit. So basically we're spending about 40% of our spending is money we don't have, and that compounds year over year. That can't be sustainable. It just cannot be sustainable. And they'd say, oh, and it's very Keynesian in this way that they say, well, you know, that's all right. We're going to spend all this money. It'll get the economy going, and it'll bring things back. And yeah, we just keep spending like this, and then the economy will catch up. Well, we've been spending like this for, what, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years now? I mean, the real deficit started under Bush. I mean, deficit's been going for a long time, but the big deficits started under Bush. And we all know that. I mean, I think everybody who listens to this show knows this is not a Republican or Democrat show here, you know, folks. The point is that we have to start cutting somewhere. And we've spent money bailing out banks. We've spent money bailing out car companies. We've spent money bailing out the public sector, the government sector. But where's the bailout for the individual? Where's the bailout for the small business guy or the medium business guy, for that matter? There are no bailouts for us. And I'm not even really going down the whole it's not fair thing on that alone, but the fact that it was our money and it's our debt that was used to bail out these companies is what I don't like, because it's not fair. And I will say that's not fair. Who gets to decide that GM, as mismanaged as it was, should survive? Now, I got into a very long argument with somebody. It was actually a very good discussion about the whole GM thing. And you know, they were on the side that the bailout of GM was a good idea. I was obviously on the side that it was a bad idea. And they talked about all the different people that were their jobs were saved. And, hey, you know what? Great. I'm glad people's jobs were saved. But I put forth that if the company had gone through the normal route of bankruptcy, people would have been put out of work temporarily. Absolutely. But one of the things that came out of the GM bailout that not a lot of people know about is the death of Saturn and how that came about. Now, I'm a former Saturn owner. I loved my Saturn. You know, they're great little cars. They just run. Good little cars. And you'll know, if you know somebody that owns a Saturn, you know that they're ridiculously loyal to Saturn. Now, I'm not ridiculously loyal to them, but I think they had a good company and a good idea. And, you know, until GM kind of messed it all up there at the end, it was actually a pretty good car company. So, obviously, Saturn had this loyal fan base. Penske Racing tried to buy Saturn from GM. And rather than let Penske Racing buy Saturn and save those jobs and save that entire company, GM said, nah, we're not interested in selling it. We're just going to shut it down. They just closed it. Now, the reality is that if this company, if GM had been in bankruptcy, there wouldn't have been a choice. The judge would have said, hey, it's open to the highest bidder. You got the most money that wants to buy this? It's sold. That's how bankruptcy is supposed to work. They take the things from a company that have value, and they sell them for as much as they can to help recoup the costs, the losses owed to debtors, owed to the people who lent money to the company that's gone under, right? That's how they pay off their debts. And at the end, when there's no more money, you know, you may not get every dollar back, and you usually don't. That's usually why they're bankrupt. But you get, you know, whatever it is, 10 cents, 20 cents, 50 cents, 70 cents, it doesn't matter, whatever on the dollar, you get some of your investment back. You don't just get completely goose-egged. And there's different types of debt, and there's all these different things, and I don't want to go into all that detail on that. But the general principle of it is that GM should have been allowed to fail. That's money that should not have been spent. And, yes, some people would have been out of work for a while. I do not in any way, shape, or form disagree with that. But like any market that gets out of whack, a correction has to occur to put things back, to put things right. And coming out of a bankruptcy, if a GM had gone through the bankruptcy process, what would have happened? Well, some argue the same thing would have happened, that GM would have come out reorganized, that they would have lost pieces of the company, but they would have come out again, and they'd probably be kind of where they're at now. The difference being, though, that it would have been done the right way. And a big difference being, Saturn would still be a company. And I guess the point is that, again, this is all, and I got to tangent it off the sequester here, but doggone, if we can't cut 2.5% out of a budget, I mean, there's got to be 2.5% of waste in practically every freaking program out there. Government programs, when you think efficiency, who raises their hand, you know, if you ask a group of people, what's the first thing you think of when you think efficiency? Who raises their hand and says government? I mean, really, nobody says that. Nobody really believes that government is efficient. Oh, there's a few people, and usually they're in the government. But the reality is that government is not efficient. It's slow. It's slothful. It is not able to change drastically with markets, hence daylight savings time. Bad practice, modern era, doesn't fit. Government is not the answer to our woes. And this 2.5% cut, in my opinion, it's a good start. Keep cutting. Now, I don't want to cut everything to the bone overnight. Absolutely not. I mean, that's chaos. I mean, we have to have a smooth transition. And I think 2.5% provides that smooth transition. If you cut 2.5% out of certain things or cut a few programs here and there, provided a kind of a fade-out period, phase in for the private sector to take over some of those duties, absolutely. And there are places where government, and you, folks, I'm not an anarchist here, you know, there are places where government absolutely serves a role, plays a vital role. Criminal justice is the first thing that comes to mind. And in my opinion, anything that's a natural monopoly, which are resources or, you know, things that it doesn't make sense, things that it would be completely unnatural to actually have competition in, things like power companies and sewer companies and things like that, you can't have real competition in those markets. You can't have 17 power lines, 10 sewer lines, you know, 5 phone lines, although the old phone system's going away. But whatever, the point is that it doesn't make sense to have competitions in those areas. And that's where it makes sense for government to look at having a role, right? Because then the only monopoly worse, in my opinion, than a government monopoly is a private sector monopoly. Because a private sector monopoly has no one, no accountability. There's no way that I can go in and demand that a monopoly change their practices. But I can get a group of citizens together and demand the government treats people better. And I can build popular support for that. And that's why when it comes to a monopoly, a true natural monopoly, things like power lines, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with that. But government does so much more. So much more. I mean, doggone, there's, what is it, Boone County is like 50% parks. And we keep having these big fights up here about the bridge and should it be tolled and all this stuff. And I have to think to myself, how many dollars have been wasted on stupid, stupid programs? These stupid Greenway bike trail things. I mean, come on. You're spending, I want to know how much per taxpayer those things actually cost. That's what I'd like to find out, because I almost guarantee you they cost more than they're worth. I mean, I understand people want to be healthy or whatever. I've been out on bike trails. I've been on walking trails. They're not heavily used. They're used, but not heavily. I mean, it's not like you're fighting over, hey, man, I need to get through here. I mean, there's more traffic on most golf courses than there is on these biking trails and walking trails. That's not a priority of government. It's not. It's not what they should be focusing on. Government has a core responsibility, and that is to provide the means of protecting our life, liberty, and property. That's what government's for. And you can't tell me that the 2.5% of crap that they cut out of the budget is in any way, shape, or form going to, unless they intentionally do so, harm your ability to life, liberty, or property to obtain those three things. There's no way. If we can't protect life, liberty, and property with $3.5 trillion minus $82 billion, I'm sorry, only $3.418 trillion. Then at some point we're just going to have to throw in a towel, because we can't afford to keep spending like this. That's all. And it's so frustrating. And I get frustrated because some of my Democratic friends, I have friends all over the spectrum, and they're on board with the whole, you know, oh, my gosh, it's the end of the freaking world. Guys, it's $85 billion in a $3.5 trillion budget. Who cares? It's not the end of the world. Planes aren't falling from the sky. And the thing is, when you say that stuff and it doesn't happen, it makes you look stupid. So don't say that stuff. We're at the bottom of the hour. I've ranted on enough about this. But if you want to call in after the break, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. And I see a couple of you guys in the queue. If you guys want to talk, you got to press the number 1 when you call in. So that's how I know that you want to talk. And sometimes, like Blog Talk does, acts a little crazy. So if I miss you for a little bit, just hang on. Eventually, it will tell me you want to talk. And I'm more than happy to go back to what we need to talk about. Like I said, Blog Talk acts crazy sometimes. So we just deal with it. We're going to take a break here, bottom of the hour. We'll be back in a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network.
Going down, going down, going down, going down. sound, the next sound reflects a complex hybrid dialect now. Detect the mesh of many elements compressed down, the melting pot of a super futurist style. The combination of a vocal caress with lungs that gasp for breath from emotional stress to special effects. In a distorted collage, carefully lies between beats of a rhythmic barrage. It's going down, the logical progression on the timeline. The separation narrowed down to a fine line. To blur the edges so they blend together properly. Take you on an audible odyssey now. It's going down.
Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, good attention free. It's going down. Nobody in the world to see. When we melt down, the wax from your rescue free. It's going down. Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, good attention free. It's going down. Nobody in the world to see. When we melt down, the wax from your rescue free. It's going down.
It is composed sentences altogether venomous. The four elements, the natural force projected daily through the sound of the source. Everybody on board as we blend the sword with the pen. The mightiest, the weapon swinging might for the chin to elevate mental space long gone with the wind to defend men from shoddy imitation. Pretend it's going down. Style assimilation readily trekking through the weaponry of a pure pedigree. Cleverly seeing through whatever is ahead of me, whatever the weather be. We advance steadily. It's going down, subterrestrial hot. A rhyme regiment that's calling the shots. An execution of collaborative plots, ready to bring the separation of style to a stop. It's going down, a logical progression on the timeline. The separation narrowed down to a fine line. To blur the edges so they blend together properly. Taking one and out of a lot of scene now. It's going down.
Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, good attention free. It's going down. Nobody in the world to see. When we melt down, the wax in your rescue free. It's going down. Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, good attention free. It's going down. Nobody in the world to see. When we melt down the wax, you wreck your
crate.
Blast off worldwide.
You do it like this.
Blast off worldwide. It's going down. Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, good attention free. It's going down. Nobody in the world to see. When we melt down the wax, you wreck your crate. For the world to see, LP and X-Men, good attention free. It's going down. Nobody in the world to see. When we melt down, the wax from your wreck is free. It's going down.
It's going down.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty on a Bright on the My View Matters radio network. The commercial there was recorded by our Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night host and syndicator, Ed Springsteen. So if you're interested in other shows, politics around the state, Ed's show tends to focus on Louisville, but it does also hit state topics. That's Monday through Wednesday, same network, 7 p.m., same basic link. And then Thursday nights, you have Dale the Truth with the Thursday Night Truth, and definitely a good show to listen to as well. So we here at the network appreciate you guys listening. And definitely want to continue to grow. If you'd like to advertise on the show, as I said, you can do so. Email myviewmatters@AOL.com. So I'm done with that. I'm moving on. So I wanted to touch on the filibuster that happened this week because that was obviously a big deal. You know, the filibuster somewhere along the way during the evening, Twitter went on fire. And Twitter's kind of what started it. And while some of the senators and folks were out having dinner with Obama, which apparently my understanding is it was some sort of Republican dinner that Obama just started inviting himself to, and he, whatever, I don't know. That's what I heard. I don't pay attention to such things. I have no use for, you know, silly dinners like that. The Rand Paul stepped up and started filibustering the appointment of Brennan to CIA to basically wanting a better answer on the use of drones. So it was all, the filibuster was all about the policy of using drones on American soil. And specifically, Rand Paul asked one simple question. And that simple question was, are you or are you not in support of using drones on American soil against American citizens? And I mean, as far as lethally, are they willing, is that a, did they believe that that was the proper use of drones in our skies in America? Now, most people agree. I mean, I don't even know what the numbers have to be, somewhere around 80% or higher. They have to be that high because this is a common sense thing. And it hits home, and it's something that we actually have to think about because it hits home, right? When we talk about drones overseas, it's overseas, there's a war, whatever, it's not my backyard, it's out of our minds, we don't care. But when you start talking about drones in America, people get nervous. And when you start talking about, hey, we could use drones to take people out here in America, people get real nervous. And they should. Every American citizen is guaranteed by the Bill of Rights the right to due process. Due process is critical, critical in our Constitution. It's a critical reason why we had a revolution at all. Before due process was set in stone, the ruling body, the authorities, could just lock you away and whatever. Right? No big deal. They could do whatever they wanted. Because there was no right to anything. One of the things that we got was the right to due process. And just because I think it's interesting, I found a good article here online that kind of outlines what due process generally guarantees. I want to read these. Due process guarantees, generally, a right to a fair and public trial conducted in a competent manner, a right to be present at the trial, a right to an impartial jury, a right to be heard in one's own defense. In other words, you can defend yourself. It also infers that laws must be written so that a reasonable person can understand what is criminal behavior. That taxes and property can only be taken for public purposes, and that the property, if taken, there must be fair compensation for that property. Those are the general things about due process. And I don't know that you're going to find anybody that disagrees that all those are good things, especially as American citizens. If nothing else, the United States Constitution affords us these rights. And I shouldn't say it affords us these rights. We have these rights inherently, right? And that's the big debate with the Constitution. But the point is that the Constitution didn't grant us rights. It protects rights that we have as people. We are human beings. We have these inalienable rights. And the Constitution protects us from a government that would always naturally seek to infringe upon those rights. That's why we have a Constitution. Before any of my constitutional friends get mad at me for saying that the Constitution grants rights. I know better. I know. But the point is that when it comes to using drones in American skies, people get nervous, and they should. Because you know what? We've all done stupid, crap that we're embarrassed about. I mean, let's be honest. Who hasn't? The idea that, oh, well, I don't do anything illegal, so I don't have anything to worry about. Well, yeah, maybe. Except that one of the other issues we have today is that there are so many laws and are so convoluted that there was a book written, I think it's called Three Felonies a Day, and I've been meaning to buy the book, but I've heard interviews with the author, and it's a very intriguing subject, that basically the laws are so complex, and there are so many laws, that basically people inadvertently commit three felonies every day. That's a problem. And when we talked about due process, one of the things listed there was that laws are simple, easy to understand, right? Well, they're not. So we're already, in its purest sense, having our due process rights violated. But when you then talk about having drones flying over the skies and shooting people suspected of a crime or whatever, American citizens suspected of a heinous act. I mean, we'll throw it out there. Let's say it's terrorism, right? If they're suspected, even as American citizens, we have the right. Even if I was going to do something horrible, which I'm not, but if I was, I would be guaranteed a right to a trial, to face a jury of my peers, to be able to speak in my own defense. These are things that are protected rights by our Constitution. And when you start using drones, you're violating that. And we had a little bit of this discussion over the guy, the crazy police guy out in California that they killed. The job of the police and law enforcement in general is to try to apprehend someone who has been accused of a crime. And it doesn't matter if they're guilty of sin and everybody knows it. Their job is to apprehend so that those people can be afforded their day in court. So those people can be given due process, shown to be a criminal if they are, face that jury of their peers, be tried and convicted, and do the time for the crime that they committed. That is what law enforcement is supposed to do. And the only time that law enforcement is supposed to use lethal force is if lethal force is being used against them while trying to apprehend someone to fulfill those duties, to bring them to trial, to face the jury of their peers and a court and all of that. That's when the police are supposed to use deadly force. And in fact, anymore, they've got the tasers, they've got all these other, you know, pepper spray, all these other things afforded to them that they don't have to use a firearm as the first line of defense anymore. Somebody comes running at somebody without a weapon, you don't have to shoot them. You can just taser them, pepper spray them, right? Because the idea is that we want people to have those rights, even people guilty of sin. It's good for the system that people who are guilty of sin get arrested, face a judge and a jury, get convicted and serve their time. It reinforces that the system works and that our rights are being protected by our government within the bounds of our Constitution. When you start talking about going around that and it's a shoot first and ask questions later situation, which is what's going on here. This is the big question about the drones. If the drones are flying around, there's somebody suspected of terrorism, we'll just take them out. That is seriously curbing due process. The guy, the crazy cop in California, his name I've already forgot, Dorner, that's his name, was burned alive in that cabin. Well, I shouldn't say that. The official story is he killed himself while it was burning around him. But based on my understanding, they had the doors covered. If he had tried to escape, they would have shot him anyway. So he was done. And if you read the story, I know a friend of mine has been talking about the Waco tragedy that happened forever ago. I forget how many years that's even been anymore. But they did the same thing where they threw in the tear gas that was flammable. Then they throw in flashbang grenades that set the thing on fire. And then as it burns down, they shoot people coming out the doors. That ain't cool. That isn't due process. I don't care how crazy you are. I don't care how guilty you are. That's not due process. As American citizens, we are supposed to be protected against the government infringing upon due process. And it doesn't matter how guilty or innocent you are. It doesn't matter. Due process is important. So this filibuster went for 13 hours. And, of course, because drones are involved, it was a big deal, right? I mean, Twitter, he was, I forget which hashtag it was or whatever, was trending number one worldwide during the filibuster. Worldwide. That's huge. Wow. And it's funny that the media reports, some folks called it libertarian porn, was one of the things that I saw it described as. Well, if that's the case, then great, because about 80% of Americans are libertarians then. I don't know what the actual percentages are, but everyone I've talked to, sans one, there's one person I found that didn't like it. Everyone I've talked about it loved it, because it's a conversation that needs to be had. And we really need to have a real serious conversation about due process and the drones and all of this stuff. And stupid McCain came out and called him, and that's the funniest part, called them wacko birds, which I think is hilarious, because not only is he out of touch with people, he's using phrases that people are like, what? What a wacko bird? What are you talking about? That's a weird phrase. So he's doubly out of touch, which is always entertaining. Just remember, Republican candidate 2008 thinks it's cool that drones might be flying around in the skies, shooting American citizens first and asking questions later. Just remember, that was the Republican candidate in 2008. Which, by the way, is why he didn't win. But that's another story. The point is that we need to have a serious conversation about the drones. And my friends on the left, and my friends in the Libertarian Party, libertarians, liberals, guys, we've been talking about the drone thing for a long time. But I've noticed lately that a lot of my friends on the left are a little bit quiet about this issue. I haven't seen a big protest like we did in 08. What's going on, guys? I mean, seriously, this is a big deal. And we need to continue to push back against these types of policies. Our civil liberties are important. And it doesn't matter that the guy you voted for is the one doing it versus the guy you didn't vote for doing it. It doesn't matter who's doing it. You got to push that team politics, that team mentality out of your mind. Forget teams. You got to look out for yourself, and you have to worry about yourself, your family, your kids, your future. And I don't mean stomping all over somebody. I mean, you need to be looking at, where is this guy that you voted for taking this country? And let's be honest here, guys. I mean, seriously, let's have a real heart-to-heart. Obama's doing the same things that Bush did. Obama's doing the same things that Bush would have done. He's doing the same things McCain would have done. I don't know about Romney. Romney kind of wandered in, wandered out, and didn't really have a much of a policy statement at all, which is also why he lost. But McCain has made it clear he's in support of this drone policy. Anybody see a problem here in 2008? Obama said he was not. Obama, without necessarily saying it so many words, made it clear to those of us who were out there that he was going to be against such policy, that he was going to be more focused on protecting civil liberties. He hasn't. In fact, in some areas, he stepped up the affront to them. Other areas, he's just continued what Bush was doing. We have to stand together against these things. And forget parties. Forget who you voted for. That stuff doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is our rights. There's an attempt to violate our rights. That's what matters. So let's stand together and say, no, we're not going to put up with this. And if you keep pushing it, there will be political consequences to what you're doing. That's what we have to do. So I will be more than happy to say I appreciate what Rand Paul did on the floor of the Senate with the filibuster. He brought the issue to the forefront. I hope that we have a serious conversation about it. I love the fact that Van Jones came out and agreed with Rand Paul. And, there were some backhanded compliments in there too. Whatever. The point is, this is an issue. This issue is one where we can all come together and agree. Hey, we don't want drones flying over the sky shooting somebody first and asking questions later. Right? I mean, we all agree on that, right? We should. Because if you don't have a warrant, who's to say there isn't a check and balance to say, oh, man, dang on it, we got the wrong house. We got the wrong street. There's reasons that there are checks and balances in the system to protect us from a government that would otherwise run us over. We have to stand together on these issues. Push party aside, push who you voted for aside, push other issues aside, and work together on the issues we agree on. And this is one of them. So kudos to Rand Paul for what he did with the filibuster. And let's do it. Let's start having this conversation. That's what we need to do. So we got 7 minutes left, and I know we have hemp, which apparently I want to get to, and then somebody in the chat room keeps bugging me about Ashley Judd, so we'll get there in a second. So, hemp. Greg Stumbo now is in control of the hemp bill's future. And unfortunately, it sounds like it's going to die. Now, Tom McKee, who is my representative, he's the representative from my area, had blocked the bill basically in committee for a week. And it got stuck there. And there was an immense amount of pressure to move that thing out. And it came from all over the state and including his own district. I know that because I helped do that. The point is that Stumbo now is sitting on it. And they're basically going to try to run the clock out on this thing. And I've talked to a lot of different people about it. And it's just sad because this is not that different from a bill that the Democrats were championing 2, 3, 4 years ago. It was 3 years ago, I think it was. Is it simply a partisan thing? Is it just, well, the Republicans have proposed it now, so now the Democrats are against it? I mean, have we come to that again? So frustrating. Folks, we've had shows on about industrial hemp. I ran the best of the interview on industrial hemp last week. If you haven't heard industrial hemp and what its benefits are and what it could do for Kentucky, listen to last week's show on the podcast. I've replayed an interview that we did about a month and a half ago, I guess, with Katie from the Industrial Hemp Museum. It's a common sense issue, and it's one that we should be working on. Yeah, it's illegal at the federal level, but we set up the framework, and we keep pushing at the federal level, and we get it re-legalized, so that we can grow industrial hemp in the state that can be a huge benefit to our farmers and really help our state out. And that's what it comes down to. And it's being blocked for what appear to be political purposes, and that's just sad. So if you want to call down to Frankfurt, yell at them. I never remember the phone number offhand, but if you go to www.lrc.ky.gov, you can find your legislator, figure out who it is. But the main thing is you want to call the legislative line down there and leave a message for Greg Stumbo asking him to continue to move the hemp bill forward, Senate Bill 50. You want to ask him to keep moving that bill forward. And that's the best thing we can do at this point. If he wants to block it, it's blocked. Nothing we can do. So at least not right now, not till next year. So I have a few minutes left, and somebody in the chat room wanted desperately to know about Ashley Judd. So, Ashley Judd will not be the next senator from Kentucky. Tell you that straight up right now. I've got $5 out there for the first person who takes the bet that Ashley Judd cannot cross the 50% threshold in this state. Period. There is absolutely no way. I don't mean this as a personal attack on Ashley Judd. I'm sure she's a real nice lady. She has her opinions, and she's made some of them very known. The opinions that I know of hers are not going to mesh with Kentucky. They're not going to resonate with Kentucky voters. There'll be people in Louisville that love her to pieces. Great. But as the people in Louisville know, and the people that the rest of the state know, Louisville is not like the rest of Kentucky, and the rest of Kentucky is not like Louisville. And so the point is, she cannot, never know when the Senate race in Kentucky, period. It doesn't matter who else gets into the race. I was asked if the Libertarians are going to get into the race. I mentioned last week I've been reelected state chairman. So I don't know of anybody who is definitively jumping into the race. I've heard some murmurs that people are looking at that. Other races, I mean, you know, it's early, folks. I don't know what people are going to do next year. September, October, that's the time frame when our folks should be getting spun up. I mean, if they're going to go out and do stuff, they need to be in touch with their community and that now, but they better have already developed those relationships before now if they're running for a race next year. I have no idea what's going to happen next year. But what I can tell you definitively is that come Election Day, November 2012, your next senator will not be Ashley Judd. Period. Just the way it is. And I, again, nothing personal. It's just that she is not going to do well in Kentucky. She has shown herself naked in movies and in public just for the heck of it. I mean, it's one thing getting paid in a movie, art, blah, 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 great. When you do it to a paparazzi camera just for fun, that's another story entirely. When you make statements like it's unconscionable to have children because there are so many starving children in the world, that's not going to go over well with Kentucky voters. It's just not going to happen. And the other big thing, of course, is that she's pro-choice, and that is a big issue with Kentucky voters, especially in the federal races. I mean, you look at what we've got. Federally versus the state, Democrats win statewide races all the time for our state offices. But when it comes to areas where abortion and some of these national issues come into play, Republicans win almost every – well, they own everything except for the 3rd District in Louisville. And that's what I would exactly predict would be the outcome if Ashley Judd is in the race. She will lose everywhere but Louisville, basically, specifically the 3rd Congressional District. Okay, there you go. That's what I got. But, folks, we're out of time for the week. And so I want to thank you all for tuning in to another edition of the show. We'll be back here next week. I have no idea what the week will bring, but we'll talk about it. Someday this General Assembly will wrap up. And, hey, maybe they'll even get around to, like, redistricting sometime. I don't think that'll happen this year, although it should. But that's another topic for another day. Folks, thanks for tuning in to Liberty Unbridled. Have a good night.